This is The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, have you lost out on a job opportunity merely because of your nationality, age, gender, or even marital status? Now, earlier this week, the Manpower Ministry revealed that about 350 companies are on the Fair Consideration Framework watch list for discriminatory hiring practices. Now, these firms tend to be from the administrative and support services, construction, education, infocom, and professional services sectors. The occupations involve a range. We're seeing architects, engineers, business professionals, IT professionals, with many being paid between $3,000 and $10,000. Under the framework, all companies are required to consider Singaporeans fairly for job opportunities. Firms on the FCF, or the Fair Consideration Framework watch list, will have their employment pass applications scrutinized and consequently experience longer processing times, according to the Manpower Ministry. The Tripartite Alliance for Fair and Progressive Employment Practices also engages such firms to offer assistance to improve their hiring practices. But the question is, are such measures enough? Joining me to talk about this today are Patrick Tay, Member of Parliament and NTUC Assistant Secretary General, and Christine Sim. She's a human resources expert, a veteran in the industry. First of all, Patrick, put this in context for us. Why has the watch list not shrunk or expanded despite the widening of the FCF requirements is something we'll get to. But what types of discrimination are we actually talking about? Because the assumption is because the Fair Consideration Framework is coming up, and that is supposed to be for Singaporeans, to have Singaporeans be considered fairly, that it's merely a question of discrimination based on nationality.
There are various kinds of discriminatory hiring practices. They include discrimination based on age, gender, race, religion, including marital status, and as well as nationality. So there are a whole list of discriminatory hiring practices that we are trying at a tripartite level to weed out and to minimize. And it affects both, not just at the hiring stage, but also within the company itself. That's something we want to, you know, in terms of HR, a good human capital practice, try to eradicate. And there are various excuses, or what I say, reasons given by employers for some of these discriminatory hiring behaviours. But I think we can attribute them to things like mindsets, stereotypes and mental models, thinking that perhaps, you know, basically a lack of attention to manpower planning and development. And employers often like the plug-and-play kind of approach, where if they need someone with that skills, or because of some urgency of projects or lack of locals with specific skills, they start hiring, for example, or start to prefer foreigners than Singaporeans. So that's something.
So some of them don't want to put the effort into training someone,
yes,
for instance.
Right. So that's one thing we want to minimize as well as eradicate as soon as we can, because I think there's also some preconceived ideas that perhaps maybe locals are either unable or unwilling to do the job. So they write them off and even considering them fairly. So I think this is unfair. And all these unconscious bias, we try to eradicate them. And also call out to employers to look objectively at the person's skills and abilities. I think they must recognize that most, if not all, Singaporeans aspire to have good job prospects and good jobs.
Christine, why don't you jump in here? From an HR perspective, what have you observed in terms of why companies might not consider a Singaporean fairly first?
I would actually just want to give my perspective from being a headhunter and also actually having put a lot of staff on contract and also in dealing with foreign talent also. I basically form my observations that it should not be just viewed from local versus foreigners at this point. I think a lot is that because of the disruption in the career landscape, some Singaporeans are not aware of where are the suitable jobs for them when they're displaced. And even if, let's say, you look at employment intermediaries like the EAs, they're also trying their very best to actually try to match the displaced PMETs to jobs and also imagine their expectations in a realistic way. And as what Patrick has mentioned, it's about mindset. It's about the stereotyping of employers that we need to actually deeply engage in. I also want to debunk the myth that our foreigners are taking away the jobs of locals in general. I would say that we also have to be realistic that sometimes skill sets that are rare, you definitely need to look at foreigners to actually step in and do the job.
Mm. Right. So what you're saying is that sometimes the companies really do not do the due diligence in terms of considering Singaporeans, but there are also instances where Singaporeans are just not fit for the job.
I would say that as a Singapore company, in general, for Singapore employers, they do try to give the Singaporeans the first opportunities. Just that if they can't find or the salary expectations are unrealistic, then of course, from a business consideration, as they have to manage costs, they have to manage profitability, and if they're in a subcontracting mode, they are under timeline to get the project off the ground. Okay. Mm. So of course they will make hiring decisions based on those pressures that they also face also. And these are the realities on the ground.
So what do you think, Patrick? Considering what Christine has said, should it sometimes be forgivable that companies do this?
Yes, we understand that now at this juncture our country is facing this economic transformation. Much of the unemployment is caused by what we call a structural mismatch. I.e. there are jobs, but we don't have the necessary human capital to fill those job vacancies. So that's the biggest challenge. I think the tripartite partners are aware that there's a need to train up our people. That's why the whole slew and series of schemes and programs, from Skills Future to Adapt and Grow, and to the many other tripartite programs that we're driving, is hoping to train and equip more Singaporeans to fill those positions of the future, i.e. the jobs of the future. But I think in the meantime, I think it's imperative and it's a call out to employers. Yes, maybe, perhaps, there's a need to, if they can justify hiring some of these foreign manpower capabilities, which can be transferred to our local manpower. I think that's a capability transfer program that's on now. Mm. Leverage on it. And really make a serious effort, a conscious effort, you know, to train our local workforce to take on these new jobs and equip them with these skills. So I think the knowledge transfer is equally important. And some of the MNC head honchos I speak to are also equally keen to transfer some of the skills to locals, because they operating in Singapore, definitely they want a core Singapore workforce to be able to drive and power their business, right, especially as Singapore acts quite like a hub.
Mm. And of course, we have to bear in mind, for those people saying that, of course, they'll hire foreigners because foreigners are cheaper. It's become more expensive to hire foreigners,
yes,
now.
Yes, because the employment pass limits have been raised to 3,006, and therefore there are some certain thresholds for that.
Actually, I want to add that on a case-by-case basis, for example, if you look at, because Patrick touched on transferable skills, yeah, I think this is very important. And when we do our career coaching, normally we will also advise employers to not just look at the resume, have a chance to talk to the person that's actually unemployed, and try to actually assess based on potential and also in terms of the transition that this person can actually go through. I think that most Singaporeans that I spoke to who are actually unemployed always tell me this, that if given the chance just to be interviewed, I would definitely want to give my best. I'm also prepared to manage expectations on a realistic level. Mm. It's just that if they're not given a chance to be interviewed, all right, how can you be heard? So I think this is very important.
The common grounds on the ground, when I engage many of our Singaporean PMEs, either professionals, managers, executives, is that I think they're not against bringing foreigners who actually help power the economy, help bring very, very specialised, very unique skill sets in very niche industries, or bring lots of business and opportunities in Singapore. I think the key is when some of these foreign PMEs actually take up roles and job roles which are actually any Singaporean PME can fill.
Exactly. And this
so much,
is why we came up with the fair consideration framework, right?
So there's a lot of scrutiny. Mm. And this couple of years since the introduction of the fair consideration framework, I'm hearing as well and seeing some of the companies I've engaged with or spoken to, and even some of our residents who actually are employers themselves, do see a sudden shift in terms of the issuing of employment passes. I think they are seeing that the Ministry of Manpower is getting more stricter, firmer, sending very pressing questions on why is there a need for you to be awarded employment pass for this instance where actually you can hire locals. And likewise, the advertising requirement, yes, it's been expanded as of 1st July this year. And we hope,
what exactly are those widened FCF requirements?
Basically, the size of companies and, of course, the salary threshold. So these two are the areas where we have previously exempted the smaller companies. Now we have reduced the size of the exemption. So I think more companies will be covered within this advertising requirement. And therefore, we hope provide more scrutiny, not just to the bigger companies, but also the much micro SMEs as well.
And local SMEs as well? I mean, do we see local SMEs on this list?
An application for employment pass, they'll be subjected to this entire regime. National discrimination, usually it's, of course, what I hear from workers or fellow PMEs is that, you know, you have a head honcho that comes from a certain country.
Yeah.
He brings some of his countrymen along to that particular department or company. Mm. I think that's one of the usual complaints. The other aspect of it, of course, is, yeah, rightly mentioned, skill sets. Mm. For example, if you're operating in a particular jurisdiction or you're doing business in a particular jurisdiction or country, they want people with from that nationality so that they can connect and make business inroads.
Which is why some HR experts have actually mentioned to me that Singaporeans need to also be willing to do overseas stints to broaden their experience, and that makes them a more employable person within such companies. Christine, you also talked about skills transfer and the importance of doing that, the importance of giving people a chance, letting them in for an interview at least before you write them off. Mm. How to convince companies to do the right thing, considering that they have their own, you know, bottom lines and deadlines to think about as well?
Well, I think that a constructive way to move forward is to have greater dialogue in managing the expectations of employers themselves, all right? And also HR people, because HR people are sometimes more order takers than order makers, because they actually follow the instructions of the organization. And so as a result, which is very important to also showcase good testimonials of successful Singaporeans who have made transition from perhaps different industries, different jobs. I've actually grown 3 CETs in the past, and I actually did PCP, that is professional conversion programs. And I realized that as the person on the ground, you really need to advocate. A lot is advocacy. We need to have champions. And also not forgetting now, the undergrads that's coming out after graduation, they're also facing a hurdle in getting into the careers that they actually are trained for. So as a result, which when you have got middle managers who may have certain HR practices that they need to enhance, to be able to open some of these doors for these graduates to come in. Because at the end of the day, if you actually look at it, we would lose a generation of people of talent who may not be able to get into a certain good career pathway because certain obstacles are there. Our good graduates, good talent may be going to jobs that really in which they're underemployed. Mm. That is actually one of the concerns that I've actually been observing. Yeah.
Patrick?
There's also another reason is awareness. I think awareness that there are actually a lot of programs, schemes, as well as support mechanisms to the labour movement, through NTUC, Workforce Singapore, E2I, as well as TAFEP, the Tripartite Alliance of Fair Employment and Progressive Practices. They don't just scrutinise and look at the watch list and put you on the watch list, but I think there's a conscious effort by the Tripartite partners to partner with these companies who may not be aware that there are actually so much of the funding, training schemes, training support to help. And I personally heard testimonies of companies who were on the watch list, were not aware that there's so many, a plethora of help schemes leveraged on them and now have gotten out of the watch list.
Oh, so they have changed their ways.
Yes.
Okay.
So as shared by Minister of Manpower, although there are 350 companies on the watch list, there are some who have left the watch list or some have rejoined or now are part of the watch list. So there are new companies as well as companies who have been promoted out of the watch
reformed
list.
And then promoted out.
Like I said, both of us earlier shared some of the reasons behind it. It could be really really discriminating practices. There can also be situations where they are unaware and there can be also situations where they need more support and close partnerships.
I was actually thinking, Patrick, that one of the measures that we could also adopt as as people who are encouraging also FDIs in here, foreign, you know, investments. And because you have foreign-owned entities who also needs to be made aware of some of the national HR strategy, because sometimes they come in, they're not aware. All right. So this is a way we can actually start upstream, all right, so that we can encourage them to consider talent that's already existing here in Singapore.
Right, so right from the beginning, yes, right to when they enter, not just when they start to look shady or their practices start to be suspect.
Yeah,
that's a good idea, in fact. But is that being done at all?
Yes, Bharati, I think maybe not done in a very big way, but we have started efforts in this. And yes, you're right. I think the Tripartite Partners are working on initiative to try to induct some of these new MNC CEOs and also CEOs of global companies. Mind you, some of these HR leads and CEOs of some of these MNCs do change every couple of years. So I think it's a constant journey. It's we are on a treadmill. You try to induct them and let them understand about our human capital practices, our more progressive labour practices in Singapore.
Because otherwise people will say, why are we bringing in foreign investments if they're going to do this, if they're not really going to provide jobs for Singaporeans in the roles we want or that we can do as well.
Absolutely.
In fact, I was just thinking also, because some of the HR heads for global MNCs may not necessarily reside here in Singapore. They might be more in the country of origin. So one of the things that maybe MOM can do for start is on their website to have a link to perhaps TAFET to look at the HR practices that we are promoting here in Singapore, so that they can also actually take a look at it from their starting point. And at the same time, I also want to actually share a case in which a foreign-owned entity actually created jobs for local Singaporeans because of the fact that they actually embrace this thing called diversity. It's actually a school that provides programs for migrant children from Philippines. Okay, so what they did was they hired the local teachers to actually administer the programs and so forth. So in a way, actually, I'm their strategic advisor. So I always tell them, hey, this is our HR practices locally, so try to adopt it and things like that. So I think that's where you can influence. I think a lot is influence. You got to find situations to influence. You have the policies. You also must have things that cascade downwards for it to be actually implemented with ease also.
But are all of these initiatives kind of toothless? I mean, we have these tripartite guidelines on fair employment practices, but are harsher measures needed in order to make companies do the right thing?
Yeah, maybe just to share, currently, if you look at what is being done under this watch list, is that recalcitrant companies who also continue to fail to hire and develop Singaporeans are placed on additional scrutiny. And in the worst case scenario, their work pass privileges are curtailed. So, maybe on the face level, we feel that it's not harsh enough. But I know some companies who had their work pass privileges curtailed, they do face business impacts and a lot of collateral damage. So they do share. And in some of the engagements with some of these employers on the watch list, yes, they are very mindful. They're very aware and, you know, they will always try to make efforts. Because you are aware we have this tripartite guidelines on fair employment practices and the fair consideration framework, etc., etc. I think it makes business sense, to comply and to have not just fair but responsible and progressive practices. For a simple reason, it affects your reputation, it affects the company's brand, and many of these are global companies. If you look at the sectors they are involved, they are in professional services, ICT, financial sector. So these are big listed global companies. So I think they also want to guard their reputation. And so therefore, all these measures actually do send some chills down the spine.
I hope so, because I only ask because it's still quite a large number of companies. Yeah. Even though I know you said that, you know, some of them have reformed, but why is it that still this number is so large, considering the punitive measures that are in place? Are they punitive enough?
Of course, there are other jurisdictions, I think, with similar kind of labour market practices and restrictions. Some countries even have anti-discrimination laws. Yeah, but the question is whether, you know, are we going down that road? I think it's a question mark, something which, you know, we may have to examine and think of. But I think the joint efforts between the tripartite partners to promote this, including the Human Capital Partnership Program, are various efforts both from a carrot and stick perspective, to try to encourage companies to go on that path. And mind you, we have to balance with the fact that, you know, we are undergoing economic transformation, we have economic challenges, we are facing competition not just within but outside of Singapore.
But you did mention that anti-discriminatory laws are maybe something we can think about in the future. Well, what sorts of conditions would we have to see before that is seriously considered, you think?
Okay, I actually would think that it's rather important for us to be cautious when we take on punitive measures, because you may actually throw the baby out with the water, and certain employers may feel that it's very costly to actually even have a base here in Singapore. Let me relocate overseas. Mm. For example, in Indonesia, for one Singapore architect that you hire, you can actually hire 10. Mm. All right. And now, of course, with the fact that with internet and everything, all your jobs can be outsourced, can be offshored. All right. In Sri Lanka, for example, there are companies that provide you with accounting outsourcing services. So as a result, which we actually have to take note that what kind of jobs do we actually need to preserve here in Singapore? All right, and how do we go about doing it? And also the advocacy, the awareness, so that we actually do not make knee-jerking decisions. Yeah,
that's Patrick, last word on anti-discrimination laws and what would the conditions be before that is seriously considered?
I think key currently is that we at a tripartite level, we have a lot of discussions on this. Even if you have an anti-discrimination law, I think what are the kind of sentences or punitive measures, and how do you prove? And all these are questions we should need to examine very carefully. It may not be a dynamic panacea to everything. That is why only certain jurisdictions have it, certain jurisdictions do not have it. And they feel that existing policies and programs and regulatory measures are sufficient. So I think at the tripartite level, we feel currently, now and of course in the shorter term, this is sufficient. And again, we have more than 100,000 companies in Singapore, and this, you know, small group of companies, we want to pay more attention and really help them overcome some of these and reform.
So while we're saying there are hundreds of companies on the watch list, relatively speaking, it is a small percentage.
As compared to the total number of companies.
What are your concerns about anti-discrimination laws? Why are you not willing to go that way?
We are hard for many of these global companies, and we are facing very stiff competition. Let's see whether we can overcome some of these challenges before we take the approach of legislation.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me today. Patrick Tay, Member of Parliament and NTUC Assistant Secretary General, and Christine Sim, Human Resources Expert and Veteran in the Industry. Thanks for joining me on The Pulse.